We present The Motion Show, Radio 4's answer to serious debating, with your chairman, Dr. Phil Hammond.
Thank you, thank you. Hello and welcome to the show that takes four top-notch media tarts and sets them on a course of linguistic destruction. On my left, the fearsome combination of Simon Fancher and Peter Bradshaw.
Hello.
And competing vigorously against them, on my right, the ever feisty team of Brian Sewell and Steve Punt.
Hello.
Ladies and gentlemen, the speakers. Over the next 30 minutes, our two teams will go head-to-head in a battle of words, wit and wisdom to decide who are the most persuasive debaters. So let's get straight on with the first motion. This house loves to watch television. Simon Fanshawe, would you now please take the lectern and propose the motion, this house loves to watch television?
Oh, I love it. I love television. I absolutely adore it. And in fact, there are one or two rather good programmes on tonight. I have to say, well, unfortunately, my video's bust. That's really why I'm a bit annoyed about that. You know, that one of the things that always got up my nose completely about this video TV thing is that, you know, you can put people on the moon, you can drive as fast as you possibly can over the land, but you still have to lie on the floor to set the video. So I've acquired one of those barcode things on the basis this would solve the whole problem, which it did until I went shopping. I went shopping the other day, put a large joint of beef down in the bag next door to the kitchen. I've recorded 4 hours of wrestling. The opposition will try and say, of course, that all TV is rubbish, and we know that that
point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Point of order, Mr. Punt.
All TV is rubbish.
Yes, point of order upheld.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fanshawe. But we know perfectly well that all TV is not rubbish. Frasier, Seinfeld, Dad's Army, 40 Towers, The Like Last, Till Death Do Us Part, Steptoe, The Live of Birds, The Simpsons, Man About the House. We can go on with a list of great television. But I would say television's greatest contribution is that it has given employment to people like Lloyd Grossman. I mean, what would Lloyd Grossman do if there wasn't television? Here is a man with no discernible talent whatsoever who spent his entire life looking through keyholes. If he was doing that in real life, he would be arrested. He'd be in jail now. But no, television has saved Lloyd Grossman. This is a man who's further down the food chain than Bill, Ben and Weed. But television has saved him. I mean, and many like him, Zoe Ball, Vanessa Feltz, Jeremy Clarkson, Ainsley Harriet. Where would these people be? They'd be out on the street committing crimes. No, this is the greatest tool of learning since Caxton invented the book, ladies and gentlemen. This house would go to bed with a Nikam stereo widescreen telly. I beg you to support.
Thank you very much. Simon Fancher. A very skillful argument there. Now, let's hear what the opposition has to say. Mr. Brian Sewell, would you please step forward and oppose the motion? This House loves to watch television.
Mr. Chairman, before I oppose the motion, I think I ought to put the proposer straight on a couple of points. Lloyd Grossman has a very promising career as a museum and galleries commissioner. Do you realise, ladies and gentlemen, that the museums and galleries of this country are all in the charge of Lloyd Grossman, the man who looks through the keyhole? Think on it. What an appalling fate for them. And Caxton did not invent the bound book. That was at least 1,000 years earlier.
Ah.
Anyway, all I now have to do, of course, is to advocate the use of television as a soporific. And in order to do so, I shall read you a list of programs. Saturday night on BBC, The Generation Game. The lusty among us might think that that was a demonstration in sexual behavior. It is nothing of the kind. Noel's House Party. You might think that is a demonstration of sexual behavior, but it's nothing of the kind. The National Lottery draw is as near as you get to sexual behavior. And then there's Match of the Day, where you do see a little kissing and hugging and lying on the ground and rolling about in each other's arms. But that, I fear, is for the homosexual and not for the rest of us.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
No, that's a point of disorder. Those who tune into ITV get Cilla Black's moment of truth. Police, camera, action. Lordy, lordy. And this man proposes that television is good for us.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. All this merely makes one feel absolutely wonderful about oneself, because one watches these kind of lowlifes on television and one realises one is not one of them.
There's no place for that sort of snobbery on this show, I'm afraid.
On Sunday, it being Sunday, on the BBC, you get the heart of the matter with Joan Bakewell. Joan Bakewell, the most pious woman in the business, the woman who sort of coos and oozes sympathy with everything. On ITV, the alternative to Miss Bakewell is a programme called In Bed With Me Dinner. And you claim that this is the greatest vehicle of education that we've had since Caxton didn't invent the book. Mr. Chairman, I think my point is made.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brian Sewell. Two arguments dripping with passion. Now, before I ask our audience here to vote, I'm going to have to throw the argument open to our speakers, Simon and Peter.
Well, what always fascinates me about people who argue against television is they appear not to have heard of the off button. I mean, Brian talks as if we've manacled him to the chair. Now, often Brian is presumably manacled to the chair, but perhaps not.
What else do you do? Do you take time to sniff the flowers? Or are you spending all your free time watching television?
Sniff the what?
Sniff the flowers. Do you not sniff the flowers?
Is there some sort of GP slang?
One of those awful things when they come in, they go, do you sniff the flowers? Oh, my God, what's wrong with me now?
You're deliberately mishearing me.
Yes, I do, but only as much as a normal couple.
Yes, thank you.
That's one
Mr. Pumps, what can you say in support of Mr. Sewell? Don't you think he's just cherry-picked the bad programme? Surely there is some good on television. There's something interactive we can all get involved in. We can do some good.
No, Mr. Chairman. In the days before television, people used to make their own entertainment.
Oh, no.
People used to make their own entertainment. And it is only from television that they have learned clichés like... In the days before television, people used to make their own entertainment. And Isaac, if you were told by some angel that you only had half an hour to live, would you rather spend that half hour learning the piano, how to play the classics of Bach, or would you rather spend it watching Duck Patrol?
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, point of order, Mr. Patrick.
Can we put it to the audience? Would you rather spend the last half hour of your life improving yourself and learning the piano, or would you rather watch The Simpsons?
Okay, no. Those of you who want to play the piano, say aye.
Aye.
Those of you who want to watch The Simpsons, say nay.
Nay!
But that wasn't the argument, was it, Simon?
Mr. Chairman, this audience have been brainwashed by the evil cathode ray tube.
Let's see what the studio audience have to say. Nev the Rev says, I love to watch television and the little people in the television love to watch me. Alistair from East Molesey. Says a lot of TV now is voyeuristic cruelty, Blind Date, Jerry Springer, even Changing Rooms. It all disgusts me. Apart from Gladiators. There you get two busty young women stood on plinths and beating the hell out of each other. Now that's entertainment. Okay, time for our moment of truth. Members of the House, consider the arguments that have been put before you. All those who are glad to be couch potatoes, say aye.
Aye.
All of those who'd rather turn off and make chutney, say nay.
Nay.
The nays have it. The winners are Brian Sewell and Steve Punt. A decisive victory. Moving on swiftly, the next motion is, this House believes the age of retirement should be reduced to 30. Mr. Steve Punt, please propose the motion. This House believes the age of retirement should be reduced to 30.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, indeed. Everyone should retire at 30. Firstly, the political will is there, largely because unemployment would be solved at a stroke. Some professions, of course, have led the way. No one takes pop stars or footballers seriously once they're over 30. Why should that not apply equally to accountants? Live fast, retire young. Think of all the jobs where retirement at 30 would be a boon to society. Judges, for example. Most crime is committed by 16 to 24-year-olds, so we'd have judges who were of the same generation of the criminals. Prisoner at the bar, you're found guilty of entering private property and stealing a video recorder. Was it like one of the 28-day ones with remote programming? Because I'll buy it off you if it was, because they're really cool. And you don't have to lie on the floor or anything. You will serve 3 months in prison, but it'll be cool and you'll get really good at table tennis. But of course this would never happen, because there would be no crime. Why? Because there would be no youth unemployment. If everyone over 30 was retired, everyone from 16 to 24 would have a job. Suddenly the bored generation who do crime for kicks would be people in their 40s and 50s. And that wouldn't be such a problem, because they have different priorities in what they'd want to steal. There would be a big black market in hedge trimmers. Mechanised tie racks and sensible yet stylish easy chairs. Also, retirement at 30 would at a stroke solve all the problems of reforming the House of Lords. We all know that young peers have a great time throwing bread rolls, crashing posh cars and going to parties. These are the people we want in the House of Lords. Not doddery old men with 200 watts per channel hearing aids. If the younger generation of aristos were forced into the Lords instead of taking up supermodelling or going into PR, we'd have a second chamber that was just as useless but much nicer to look at. There is, of course, a problem. It takes 25 years to build up a decent pension. So everyone would have to start making pension contributions from the age of 5. You'd be able to buy a Fisher-Price pension. But this would help inculcate a sense of financial responsibility, which you could then lose completely at the age of 31. Because you'd get much more out of a round-the-world cruise in your 30s than in your 60s. What's the point of having a sun-deck swimming pool if all you can do is go up and down with a very slow breaststroke, stopping only for cups of tea and more beta blockers? Also, having 45 years of retirement is not only desirable but necessary because it takes that long to become any good at gardening. Now, at the moment, only old people have decent gardens, because only old people have the time and experience to know how to not make things die in a fortnight. Let that knowledge be shared. Also, and most importantly of all, retirement at 30 would mean that Britain would become a nation that was really, really, really good at crown bowls. Our soccer team is in decline, our cricket team a shadow of its former self. But with this measure, Britain can lead the world at bowls, dominoes and whist drives. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, ask yourselves this. If we all retired from work at 30, just how much will we save the NHS on coping with coronaries? Vote for leisure. Vote for lack of stress. Vote for 25 less years standing next to a photocopier or trying to retrieve voicemail. I urge you to support this motion.
Thank you very much. Steve Thomas.
An almost impenetrable argument there, but I'm sure Simon Fanshawe will have something to say about it. Mr. Fanshawe, please take the lectern and oppose the motion. This House believes the age of retirement should be reduced to 30.
Mr. Chairman, you're very kind. Steve actually glosses over the pensions issue. That is the problem. There are 10 million pensioners now. If we leave the age of retirement where it is, there will be 15 million pensioners by 2030. So if we lower the age at which people become pensioners, there will be over 20 million people by 2030 drinking Ovaltine, playing whist, and standing at bus stops shouting, I'm 35, you know! And no one at work over the age of 30. What a nightmare! The only people in work will be young people. The whole world of retail, finance, banking, insurance, staffed by teenagers. Gynecologists will be people not old enough to have babies. It won't just be policemen who will be younger than everybody. You'll go and see your doctor. You'll be talking to a 12-year-old. Phil, you'll go and see Phil here. Be, what's wrong with me, doctor? I don't know. Let's look through the round window, shall we? Even B&Q recognises this. They are actively looking for older people, older employees. And have you been to B&Q recently? You'll realise why. B&Q sells something called heavy-duty fuzzy feet. Now, for those of you who have never encountered a heavy-duty fuzzy feet, it's what you put on the bottom of a chair in order to stop it scratching when it moves across the floor. And I went into B&Q recently just for fun, a little bit drunk, I have to admit, and asked whether they had any light-duty fuzzy feet. I might as well have asked for a bread in a bicycle shop. The teenager had steam coming out of his ears. The only thing you can do with these people that's useful is to go into B&Q and say to these teenagers, have you got a blank stare? At which point they will look vacantly at you and go, duh! And you just say thank you and walk out. Now, the point is that old people have wisdom. We need them in work. Now, that may be because I'm over 40. It may be because now I get my head stuck through the banisters. I can get it out on my own. But we spend 50% of all welfare on pensions. At the moment, the ratio of people who work to the people who claim pensions is 3.3 to 1. By 2030, it'll be 2 to 1. So there'll be less working people paying for more pensions.
Fewer.
So they'll have to work more, which means that they will become older due to
Fewer.
The stress. The whole country will be pensioners. Edinburgh, Liverpool, Glasgow will be Spittoon City. Everybody will be wearing plastic galoshes over their sensible shoes. The whole place will be selectively deaf. You'll be able to recognise Brits aboard because they'll be going, did you say Thursday? If you drop the retirement age to 30, it won't be Cool Britannia any longer. It'll be Drool Britannia. You have to oppose the motion.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Sewell, were you trying to raise a point of order?
Oh, I was trying to make him realise that there is a difference between less and fewer. And one applies in one place and the other in the other.
Mr. Chairman, may I make a point of order?
Yes.
That was a point of syntax that Mr. Sewell made, not a point of order.
Mr. Sewell, can you go back in time? A little back in time.
Mr. Sewell is back in time.
Sorry.
I have only one point to make, which
Make the point.
Well, if I were allowed to make the point instead of constantly being hassled by the opposition.
I'm so sorry.
The one point I want to make is that this is the salvation of the education system in this country. It is quite clear that young people do not want to be educated. So, we tell them that they retire from work at the age of 30, and they begin it at the age of 4. It then means that they go to school when they retire at the age of 30. They spend, at the age of 31 or 2 or 3 or 4, some years in infant school. Then they go to secondary school. With luck, at the age of 40 or so, they will creep into the local comprehensive. And sometime in their middle 40s, they may emerge from a university. And then life really begins, and it puts new meaning into the term, life begins at 40.
Thank you. Very, very cogent point. Thank you, Mr. George.
Rather grudging applause.
And it was so sleepy. Thank you. Now, let's see what the audience had to say on this matter. Oh, Mr. Bill Warboys. Yes, my pensions advisor told me you have to plan your retirement 30 years in advance, so how can you do that with a nipple in your mouth? Time for the vote. All those who want to down tools at 30, say aye.
Aye.
All those who'd rather grind on till their prostate packs up, say nay.
Nay.
And the ayes have it. Brian Sewell and Steve Punn. Now, Peter Bradshaw, I now ask you to impress us with your oratory. Would you please propose the motion, this house believes we have been visited by aliens. This house believes we have been visited by aliens.
Consider, if you will, the great infinity of time and the sheer vastness of the universe. Surely, ladies and gentlemen, only those of the dullest and most stunted imaginations could possibly believe that there were no aliens out there. And let me say right away, on another point of order, I don't much care for this nasty and disempowering word alien. I prefer the term extraterrestrial friend that I haven't met yet. Yes.
Intergalactic hitchhiker.
Yes, exactly. Look around you. Aliens, intergalactic friends, they're everywhere. Every time you dial 192 and someone says, BT Customer Services, Lee speaking, I'm sorry, the number you require is not listed. You see, that's an alien saying that. See, that's not a human being saying that. Or when you go to the supermarket and the dead-eyed person on the till says over and over again, do you want cash back? You see, that's an alien. See, no human being say that. Now, you see, these people are behind tills. They get people from other planets to do the jobs because the beeping cash register reminds them of their mother. You know, slightly sort of... You see, there are lots of aliens making it big in public life. Teen pop sensation Billy is obviously an alien. See, that face is not human, if you think about it. Try to conjure up Billy's face in your mind. When she's alone in her bedroom, her head shrinks to the size of a pea. Did you know that? Cliff Richard, alien. See? Have you seen his sexy new image? Have you seen this? With the stubble and stuff? Do you know he's 58 years old? That's in Earth years. Actually, he's 850,000 years old. And he's from one of the moons of Mercury. Glenn Hoddle, alien. Eileen Drury, obviously an alien. Eileen Drury is the faith healer that helps the England team to do so well.
Point of order. Point of order,
Point of order,
Mr. Pump.
So much for intergalactic powers.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, we must realise aliens are a fact of life. Soon they will become marching out of the closet, their little green antennae waving. They're here, they're queer. Queer looking, anyway. So get used to them. Ladies and gentlemen, I commend this motion to the House.
Thank you, Mr. Bradshaw. Mr. Steve Punt, I can see you don't want to let that go unchallenged. Please take the lectern and oppose the motion. This House believes we've been visited by aliens.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, no. We have not been visited by aliens. Why? Because the majority of people who think we have are nutters.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Point of order, Mr. Panchel.
They're not nutters, they're aliens.
Point of order overruled.
That is why, of course, that is why it's always a big event when someone with a responsible job sees one. You see, Midwestern farmers who live in the middle of nowhere see them all the time. People with odd twitches and strange beards seem to see them every day. But if it's a policeman, or even better, an airline pilot, suddenly it's respectable and they're rushed onto the television and UFO people go, look, this person's not a nutter. It's a highly trained civil airline pilot. You can believe them. But this is entirely fallacious. Just because someone is a policeman or an airline pilot doesn't mean they don't have nutter potential. Because how many times have you seen TV documentaries with airline pilots claiming to have seen UFOs, and you think, well, hang on, how come none of the 300 passengers seem to see it? The fact is that after half a century of alleged UFO sightings, there is still no proof of any kind that we have ever been visited by aliens, and I know because I've read the books. They're bestsellers. The theory goes roughly like this, and this is absolutely true. The aliens came from the Sirius system. We know this because there's an African tribe called the Dogon, who were found to have knowledge of the Sirius system, which was impossible without modern astronomy, which they didn't have. These aliens founded a civilization which built the pyramids, but was then wiped out in a flood. Now, the pyramids are a real thing with nutters. Nutters always go, who built the pyramids, eh? Ha-ha! Who built the pyramids? I'll tell you who built the pyramids. Builders. Okay? That is who built the pyramids. But the nutters will go, aha, ah, but they took 200 years to build. Exactly. That is how you know it was builders. When the pharaoh got the original estimate, it said 3 months. The key to understanding alien theories is it's the same thinking that underpins religion and the legal system. It's not that you should be able to prove it, but that you shouldn't be able to disprove it. And to illustrate the logic of alien thought, I've got a book that I bought in a second-hand shop in Crawley, and it's called Our Mysterious Spaceship Moon. And the theory of this book is that the spherical object that orbits our planet is in fact a spaceship cunningly disguised as a moon. Now, this is the most complicated possible explanation, and therefore conspiracy airheads would love it. And secondly, of course, it is impossible to actually disprove it, short of drilling right the way through the moon and saying, look, no gear stick. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, finally remember this. Almost every report of alien abduction you read involves what? I'll tell you what. It involves the abductee being forced against his will to have sex with amazing alien women who are simply using him for a breeding experiment. And when you actually see these people interviewed, you realise why sex with aliens appeals to them so much. Because no human woman would go anywhere near them. Ladies and gentlemen, I urge you to vote as a grown-up tonight. The whole idea of alien visits is preposterous. The whole theory of alien possession is preposterous. Vote for me, or we will destroy your puny planet.
Thank you very much. Deepa. Mr. Fanshawe, do you wish to add anything?
One of the interesting things about this is the notion of being visited by it, because the notion is not about being invaded, it's about being visited. And I like the idea of aliens RSVPing. And actually, I once interviewed a man, one of those self-same that Steve talked about, and I have to admit he was absolutely barking and completely repulsive. And he drew a picture of the person he'd been abducted by. And it is an incontrovertible truth that all pictures of aliens that you see, or models of aliens that you see in the kind of shops where these kind of people hang out, all look like Shirley Bassey. So I do believe in aliens because I've seen Shirley Bassey.
Mr. Punt, do you believe that other life forces exist?
They could well do. Statistically, it's very likely that they do.
But they wouldn't
but
want to visit us.
The notion is that they haven't visited us yet.
No.
Despite the fact we've sent them out the little Blue Peter thing in the satellite that's flying into space at this very moment with sort of join-the-dots pictures of naked humans on it. When that lands on some far distant planet, that's really going to encourage them to visit, isn't it?
Thank you. Well, let's have some comments from our audience. Sally from Barking. An alien in law is a person residing in one country while remaining a citizen of another, so we're surrounded by aliens. Na-na-na-na-na-na. And Alice Berry Potter, why are we so concerned about aliens visiting us? My boyfriend hasn't been around for 2 years and he's only in Hemel Hempstead. All those who believe we've been visited by protoplasm from Pluto say aye.
Aye.
All those who don't say nay.
Nay.
Yet another conclusive victory for Brian Sewell and Steve Punce. It's now that time of the show where we spring a mystery motion upon our speakers. Okay. Even I don't know what it's going to be, so it's time once again to say, spin the tombola, please, Lulu. Now, pluck one of the envelopes out at random and hand it to me. Thank you, darling. Here it is. And the motion is, this house believes journalists do more harm than good.
Yes, of course they do.
This house believes journalists do more harm than good. Propose it, please, Peter.
Yes, indeed.
Everybody would agree with that, wouldn't they? Surely they would. Journalists do more harm than good. Everybody hates journalists, don't they? If you ask anybody what their opinion is of journalistic ethics and morals, they would say, yes, of course, it's disgusting. But we still buy newspapers and read them and all the rest of it. So how does this relate, I hear you cry, to journalism doing more harm than good? Of course it does. We want it to do more harm than good to the people to whom we want it to do harm to. That is to say, corrupt and loathsome people in public life and politicians. So yes, I believe it should do more harm than good. We want a vehement and confrontational and disputatious press in this country, not the bland and boring press that there is on the continent and in the United States. So yes, yes, and thrice yes.
Thank you very much, Peter Batchelor. To oppose the motion, this House believes journalists do more harm than good, I'd like to call on Mr. Steve Punt.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that journalists do a great deal of good. We all know we ought to say, oh yes, newspapers are terrible, but we all know we read them and we all know we love them. And there are positive reasons why. Firstly, journalists have made a wonderful and enormous contribution to the English language. Where... How would we have sentences like I married, heartbreak, sex change, death plunge, office, Romeo, were it not for journalists? But more to the point, journalists' prime function is, of course, to give us things to talk about. How would we know about such vital things as Prince Harry's haircut, Eileen Drury, or Freddie Starr's eating habits, were it not for this country's tabloid press?
Thank you very much, Steve Punt. Do you wish to add anything, Mr. Sewell?
Yes, I wish to insert my tongue in another cheek.
Volunteers, please.
Form an orderly queue.
What would we do without the news? Of course journalists are a good thing in capital letters. Oh, the world would be deeply impoverished without them.
Thank you very much. No more. I fear I'm going to have to throw it over to the House. Those who believe in the motion, this House believes journalists do more harm than good, say aye.
Aye.
Those who disagree with the motion, this House believes journalists do more harm than good, say nay.
Nay.
The nays have it. And the winners are Brian Sewell and Steve Punt. That's all from the motion show this week. It only remains for me to thank our speakers, the sad losers this week, Simon Fanshawe, Peter Bradshaw. And our winners, Brian Sewell and Steve Punt.